I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Pennsylvania is one of the few states with a governor who supports the resettlement of refugees. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says his state won't accept them. What might these decisions mean going forward? Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty talked about it with Melanie Nezer, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for HIAS. It's one of the nation's 9 resettlement agencies and head of Refugee Council USA.
The 90-day resettlement program is federally funded, but the support programs that are critical to the success of the federal ones are state funded, or at least they are in Pennsylvania. So is there a discussion now about what to do if governors should in the future cut funding to some of these support programs?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about that right now. This is, very concerning because we do have a very established process for resettling refugees that's worked for decades. So this would be a disruption. I do want to say that the funding that the states provide is reimbursed by the federal government. I don't know if it's a one-to-one match, but a significant portion of the benefits that that states pay out to support refugees is reimbursed by the federal government. But that said, if a governor says we're not going to be providing benefits for refugees or a particular group of refugees, it is going to be a problem for the resettlement network. We've already seen in Indiana, a Syrian refugee family actually was turned away. Not my organization, but a different resettlement network had to resettle that family in Connecticut. So this is not a way to run the refugee program. It has to be a federal program.
Are you working on legislation or in the beginning of that process to see if there's a way to cut out a state government if them yanking funding from some of the support programs was going to compromise their survival?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say what the government, the federal government is thinking about right now. I think it's too soon to really go down that road. I mean, I know that, for instance, in Indiana, the ACLU has filed a lawsuit. I don't know if there's going to be a groundswell of governors who follow that. Once governors really start talking to the mayors and the local communities about the program and learning more about it, I'm hopeful this will not be a domino effect.
It's more than just a financial thing. It's trying to assess how welcoming an area might be. But one would presume that the communities at the local level are welcoming. Otherwise, there wouldn't be offices there.
There's a lot of consultation among the resettlement agencies, local government, service providers, schools, hospitals. These communities are ready to welcome refugees. So by the governors making these proclamations, it's turned into a political issue, but this is really a community-based program that's a partnership of faith and humanitarian organizations and local governments and citizens who have spent countless hours and donated countless blankets and beds and other furniture and filled refrigerators and met refugees at the airport. I mean, this is stuff that's going on every day in our communities for decades. So it's going to take a lot more than a quick decision by a governor to derail that.
And you mentioned, that this particular resettlement program has been in place since the 80s. Can you think of another time since then where there's been maybe not equivalent, but similar, and I'll use your phrase again, the exploitation of any underlying xenophobia that might exist in some of these communities?
I personally have not seen it. I've been working in refugee and immigration issues since before 9/11, and I didn't see it then the way it's happening now and so fast. Maybe it's because of the media, social media, and less kind of actually talking to each other and more talking at each other. But I don't recall any time where this has just happened so quickly and with such little regard to the facts. The Paris attacks were over the weekend. We were all horrified by that and shaken by it. And then by Monday, 30 governors or 31 governors had come out against the resettlement program, which has nothing to do with what happened in Europe. Nothing at all. Totally unrelated. But yeah, so I mean, really, you can see that there wasn't much deliberation about this.
That's Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty talking with Melanie Nezer from the resettlement agency HIAS. You can find more stories about the resettlement controversy at keystonecrossroads.org. Immigrants, like refugees, face many challenges as they attempt to forge a new life in a new land. On Story Corner, Namisha Ladva records her family's experience when they decided to seek permanent residence status after arriving illegally in the United States 9 years before.
It starts when I was 21 years old. I'm a senior at UCLA, but on this day, I'm in Los Angeles federal court. I am an illegal alien, and I am turning myself in. When I was 12 years old, my parents came to this country on their visitor visas, fully expecting to overstay and build a life in this country. My father naively believed that if they just came here and worked hard, they would find a way to become Americans. There was one possible chance. If we turned ourselves in as illegal aliens, we had the right to a hearing. And at that hearing, we had to convince the judge on three grounds. One, that we had made meaningful ties to the country. Two, that we had good moral character. And three, that the deportation itself would cause undue harm. There was one problem. Because of my age, I was no longer included in my parents' we. My only chance was to have my case heard on the same day by the same judge and hope that the strengths of my parents' case would inform the decision made on mine. Our attorney informs us that in Los Angeles, there are seven judges who sit on the federal immigration bench. Three of them, they are really just looking for a reason to let you stay. The other three, they need to be convinced, but we have a pretty good case. The last one, he tells us, has a nickname, the Hanging Judge. On the day of our hearing, we're gathered in the cafeteria. We've invited people to come and support us. I see my roommate and her mother. I see the retired teacher couple who gave my parents money when we ran out. And then I see my attorney. Listen, he says, we got the hanging judge. We have to get to court. It turns out it's pretty unusual to have 30 people show up to a deportation hearing. My dad is holding the door open so people come in, and suddenly there's a loud voice behind him. Shut the door! It's the judge. The judge is looking at the paperwork. The first thing he says, these people are immediately deportable. There's no reason for a hearing here today. The prosecuting attorney who represents the Immigration and Naturalization Service stands up. Your Honor, in light of the people who seem to have shown up for this case today, I think we should hear it. The judge grumbles, but he lets the bailiff call order, and my dad takes the stand. He answers some questions. Witnesses are called. A psychologist takes a stand. He talks about my brother. He's 8 years old, and he's having nightmares because he's afraid he's going to be separated from his family. So the judge says that's enough. Well, he said, in light of all these people you've stuffed into my courtroom today, the deportation is canceled. Everyone is so happy except me because I realize he's taken my case in his hand. This case truly has no merit. My attorney gets up. Your Honor, it's clear that this young lady is part of the family we just heard from. She's just had a few birthdays and her case has to be heard separately. The INS prosecuting attorney stands up. Your Honor, I think we should hear this case. So I'm called to the stand. He asked me if I've ever had a job here. The truth is, I took an office job. I was applying to graduate school and I didn't have money for my applications. Have you worked in this country illegally? Yes, sir, I have. The judge calls the attorneys to the bench, sends them to sit back down. I'm all alone on the stand. I'm looking out at the people who have shown up for me today. And then I see that the judge is looking at the people as well. The order to deport is canceled. I am so excited. I finally let my tears fall. I'm finally home.
That's Nimisha Ladva, recorded at the National Museum of American Jewish History's Freedom Seder Revisited, co-presented with First Person Arts. She's currently a visiting assistant professor of English at Haverford College. Turning to this evening's headlines, domestic violence shelters in Pennsylvania, cut off from their government support due to the state budget stalemate, are getting an early Christmas present. The state has released $1.4 million in federal funding owed to shelters and other local programs. Governor Tom Wolf says the money was released after collaborating with the federal government. A state report finds New Jersey's used car industry has been allowed to defraud consumers for years and pressured Motor Vehicle Commission officials to manipulate and weaken regulations. The State Commission of Investigation says 11 multi-dealer locations owe some $10 million in unpaid taxes. It also says police and regulatory agencies frequently overlooked rampant licensing abuses. Again, NPR News is covering the shootings in San Bernardino, California, and we'll have an update in NPR's newscast at 7:01 on WHYY-FM. 57 degrees, it's 6:20. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Showers into this evening, and then gradual clearing overnight, falling back to 46 degrees, giving way to a sunny Thursday, high 52, but wind gusts to 25 miles an hour will make it feel much colder. The Sixers beat the Lakers last night, snapping a 28-game consecutive losing streak stretching over two seasons. Now, can they keep this streak alive?
You hope that the joy of last night can hopefully get them some more wins, but in the meantime, you consider that not the ultimate goal, and some other goals seem to take precedent.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Abington Hospital Jefferson Health supports WHYY. Abington Hospital has been recognized as a fully accredited chest pain center by the Society of Cardiovascular Patient Care. The specialized physicians at their Heart and Vascular Institute help patients who arrive with symptoms of a heart attack, quickly evaluating patients experiencing these symptoms and offering the best available treatment options. If you have chest pain, their team is dedicated to helping you continue to enjoy life. Learn more at jefferson.edu/abington.
The Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, America's first pediatric hospital, supports WHYY. Donor support helps CHOP make medical advances that benefit children everywhere. Information is online at giving.chop.edu.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. A national survey out today puts some numbers behind a habit that's resulting in more and more emergency room visits. People chatting or texting on cell phones as they walk down the street. As WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, a Philadelphia doctor is part of a push aimed at changing that behavior.
On a soggy morning, Alon Tillman is standing in front of a pharmacy on Market Street. She has a couple text messages to shoot off before class and doesn't want to bump into anyone in the process again.
It was really awkward and I just felt like an idiot, kind of.
Jack Miller does the same thing these days. He says he's seen too many people nearly hit by cars because they were paying attention to their cell phones instead of traffic.
There was a young lady in front of me, and the light turned, and she was on her phone, and I just tapped her on the shoulder, and she was startled that someone tapped her, but it also kept her from being run over by a bus.
Not surprisingly, Miller thinks so-called digital deadwalkers are a significant problem. A new national survey from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons backs that up. 4 out of 10 people say they've seen someone trip, fall, or get hit by a car because they were distracted by their cell phones. About 1 in 4 surveyed say something like that had happened to them. Dr. Alan Hillebrand is an orthopedic surgeon at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital.
Remember, this is by survey, so there's no fact-checking here. I mean, people may, understanding the nature of the survey, may not want to admit to these injuries. I would argue that that number is probably a low estimate.
Hillebrand says the best and perhaps only way to curb the trend is to make people aware of the problem. I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
The 76ers go for 2 in a row when they take on the Knicks this evening. Let's look at where they've been and get a sense of where they're going with Mark Zumoff, Emmy Award-winning play-by-play broadcaster for the 76ers. Mark, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Dave, you're quite welcome. It's actually rather stirring that we're going for 2 wins in a row when you consider how we started the season.
It certainly is, and I watched last night's game and heard you, and it was certainly poignant for longtime fans. There's Julius Erving and Clinton Richardson in the house honoring the late, great Moses Malone, all members of the most recent championship team way back in 1983. So, Mark, here we are celebrating an ending of a pro sports record 28-game losing streak. Take us through what's been called general manager Sam Hinkie's process to restore the team to true contender status.
Well, among Sixers fans, the ardent Sixers fans, that's exactly what they call it, the process. And basically, when Sam came in, the 76ers were actually left in tatters. They had made an ill-fated trade for Andrew Bynum, who is a center of some repute. But unfortunately, he had severe knee issues and actually never played 1 minute for the team. And in order to acquire him, they basically broke up the nucleus of a team, traded away a lot of veterans, and in return got a lot of first-round picks. And while some general managers in the NBA consider those to be of high value because it's a great way to rebuild, others choose to go the free agent route and take more established players. So when you're dealing with young players, you are dealing with the inevitability that it takes them time to develop. And when they take that time to develop, there is unfortunately a fair amount of losing. And that's what the Sixers have experienced over the better part of the last 3 years.
Though some wonder why it can't be a combination of both. Consider the Minnesota Timberwolves. They have two young stars, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and yet they're mentored by Kevin Garnett, Tayshaun Prince, and Andre Miller, who I believe collectively have played just under a half century in the association. Our veteran is who? Robert Covington at the sage age of 24.
You're right. There are a bunch of young guys who literally have to police themselves. I think one of the thought processes behind not having veteran players is that if you do have them, they tend to grumble when young players are being played ahead of them, and that's what Sam Hinkie wants to do. He wants to get young players experience. He has thrown them into the fire. And there is no substitute for playing experience. So while it would be nice to have a mentor looking over your shoulder, it takes a special veteran to assume that role while not playing and not wanting to take the risk of acquiring someone who's going to hurt the chemistry of a young team. The Sixers choose to go this route, and hopefully it'll benefit them in the long run.
We've heard about these young players, and almost every player who comes into the league really only knows inordinate winning, and now this losing and losing. Let's talk about Coach Brett Brown. I believe his record now is 38 wins, 144 losses. I can't imagine any other NBA coach starting out would still be in the league. What about Brown that he, A, has the stamina to do this and is still valued by management as the person to lead them into the promised land?
He's really been a remarkable coach, leader, mentor, and face for the franchise when you consider what they've been through. He is now in his third season, and any coach or player is an inbred competitor. Nobody wants to lose. So what he's had to do is he's had to steel himself from that. He has had to keep his players together and steel them from that and ultimately focus on other goals, whether it be player development, player chemistry, and you allow wins and losses to take care of themselves. You hope that the joy of last night is something that can spread over the team and hopefully get them some more wins. But in the meantime, you consider that not the ultimate goal, and some other goals seem to take precedent.
Mark, thanks so much for breaking down the plays and players for us on Newsworks Tonight.
Anytime, Dave. My pleasure.
Mark Zumoff, Emmy Award-winning play-by-play broadcaster for the 76ers. They take on the Knicks in New York tonight. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
The Barbara Brodsky Suites at Lankenau Medical Center support WHYY. Complementing Lankenau Medical Center's commitment to quality patient care, the suites are designed with their patients' privacy and well-being in mind. Each suite features private living and dining areas, personalized amenities, and concierge services. Designed to be warm and inviting, the Barbara Brodsky Suites provide a novel option in private hospital accommodations. To take a virtual tour, mainlinehealth.org/Brodsky.
Newman University supports WHYY and encourages listeners who are looking to change life direction to discover the master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling. The program can help prepare adults for professional licensure and roles in community counseling. Designed to integrate psychology and spirituality, this ecumenical program is open to people of all faith traditions. Details at newman.edu/WHYY. Newman University proudly supports WHYY.
This evening's forecast, showers clearing out, clearing overnight, low 48 degrees. Tomorrow, plenty of sunshine, windy, gust to 25 miles an hour, high 52.